Welcome again to Cottage Talk. I'm Russ Goldman, and co-hosting with me today will be David Hulley. In this episode, we'll be previewing the upcoming match for Fulham against Birmingham City. On the road, it's a huge match for Fulham, and we will be going through that throughout the show. Before we get going, I do want to wish a very happy birthday to Danny Murphy, who turned 39 today. He is my favorite Fulham player since I've been a Fulham supporter, so I just want to wish him a very happy birthday. Also want to mention that during the show we will be discussing the Juventus match from 6 years ago. It is 6 years ago today that Fulham beat Juventus 4-1 at Craven Cottage to move ahead in the Europa League. We will be discussing that as well. I look forward to talking to David about that. We have much to get through, but to start the show, what I'm going to do is I'm going to be playing an interview done yesterday with the Fulham head coach, Slavisa Jokanović, with Communications Director of Fulham Football Club, Sarah Brooks. She did this yesterday. I'm going to play that, and then that's how we're going to start the show. So without further ado, and again, thank you to Fulham Football Club for allowing me to use this clip. Here is Slavisa.
Slavisa, when the players came off the pitch on Saturday, I've rarely seen them so crestfallen, so affected by a result, and yet this week in training, there's a lot of spirit. They are very upbeat. They seem very positive. How are you feeling?
I feel well. I am confident. I trust my players. We can resolve this moment where we actually right now. It's true. After the defeat, what we made last Saturday, it's not easy afternoon for us and. Generally, we are recuperating our mind and our power, and I am sure we're going to show different face in Birmingham.
The performance for the first 45 minutes was very positive. It was attacking, and yet in the second half, it was a very different performance. I know Bristol obviously influenced that because they had to attack, they had to try and get something. But what can you explain the differences in the two halves?
It's really complicated to explain. This situation which we find last Saturday, it's generally we play very good football for 45 minutes, we score the goal, we have chances for score some goal more. At the beginning, in second time, we start be really confused and start be scared about what's going to happen in the end of the game. It's they push more what they pushing in the first 45 minutes, but they deserve these points what they won against us. We made many individual mistakes and it's generally we didn't find emotional stability in this moment, and at the end we paid a very expensive price. We don't have time for crying, and we don't have time for be depressive. It's moment for be strong, for be all together, for understand what is our situation. I completely believe and I trust this team. It's crucial night game. It's front of us now. This is stop the game and start the war. And it's more important to arrive with the right mentality, be more solid, more confidence, more solidarity, be all together and fighting for the last second.
Is it more frustrating for you and for the players that you know that you have so much quality in the squad, you know the football that you are capable of playing in the squad, but it is those lapses of concentration or perhaps character that are costing so dearly in football matches?
Our job is fighting with this kind of the situation, and it's part of the football too. It's football is not only trophies or victories or nice afternoon football. In the same time, it's a situation like we are actually right now. It's moment. I trust my players. It's moment for be all together. In the same time, I understand how supporters is unhappy. And I understand too, reaction after the Bristol game is completely normal. It's I cannot expect nothing different. In this moment, I need support my team, and we need to be all together. I am sure people gonna support us for resolve this situation where we actually right now. It's more important in this moment is Fulham. It's not one player, it's not one mistake. We need to be now generally all together and push same in same way all together. We have to be prepared. It's my job is prepare the team, and responsibility of my players too is be prepared what is front of us. I'm gonna repeat, it's football. It's full of the different situation, and different this situation is for real real men, and it's let's doing, and it's moment for show character. It's moment for understand where actually right now. It's moment for understand too. It's many people observe us what we gonna do. And we are fighting for being in this stage, in this situation. We are football. We have to be football team. We have to be enough brave, and we have to push hard for resolve this situation. First chance for us is game what we're gonna play against Birmingham. And we cannot waiting for what's gonna happen in next games and what's gonna happen after the international break. We need to put our 120% of our possibility for this game what is front of us, and after we're gonna continue take this after Birmingham game, 8 game crucial for our future.
The international break will be easier to go into with a positive result to give that mentality, that frame of mind, and that preparation for the MK Dons game after the break.
Yeah, it's true, but it's we don't gonna finish our job this weekend. We are in this situation where we actually right now front of us is 1 month and a half for working with maximum concentration, and for solve this kind of the situation. We made many mistakes this season, and now it's not only about make one afternoon good. It's about make it this 2 months or one month and a half what is front of us with maximum attention.
And there are 9 games left. Can you sum up what you need for those 9 games?
I need brave people. I need people who understand for what we are fighting right now. I am talking about war. About game is something interesting and nice, but it's fighting for Sarai, and we are in this kind of the situation without any panic. And push maximum in the training ground and in the pitch where we have to play the football game.
We wish you luck on Saturday.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we are back, and there was an interview done on Thursday with the Fulham head coach Slavisa Jokanović by Sarah Brooks, director of communications for Fulham Football Club, and I want to thank James Wyatt for sending me the audio clip that we could play during the show. Okay, it looks like my Cottage Talk co-host is on the line with me. Mr. Holly, how you doing?
Hello, Russin. I apologize for not being on at the start. And I'd also like to apologize to you because, you know, you and all the listeners, you have to put up with me once or twice a week, usually, for an hour maybe, with all my claims of being right all the time, et cetera, et cetera. But I spent the whole day yesterday with my son to hospital, and he told me, you only think you're right, but actually, he's the one who's right all the time, and I had it for a whole day. So, you know, you only have it for an hour twice a week, so I think you're quite lucky, actually, really. But he's got some very interesting theories about what Fulham should be doing and why we're not successful. I'll share them with you later if you want when we do the actual prediction to the show. But otherwise, good to be back on a very cloudy and grey afternoon, unfortunately, here up in Lincolnshire.
Okay, well, Dave, listen, it's always great to have you on, and I'm glad that you could do this with me. I just played the audio clip to start the show from Slavisa. What did you make of it? Anything stick out to you?
Well, a bit of it, you know, I got an impression that he wasn't quite as buoyant and as bullish as he has been at times. And a couple of things he said, I don't know, talking about, he said he wants players with character, so I'm thinking, does that mean he's going to change the whole team tomorrow? Because I don't think we saw much character in the second half against Bristol City, to be honest with you. And, you know, people want to fight, but I think he's finding it tough. No one said it was going to be easy. You know, there's no magic wand. The problems we have, they've been here for several managers now, or several coaches. It's not particularly one coach or manager's had a bad time. So I think we knew that there wasn't a quick fix, even though some of us hoped there would be. I think it's safe to say we won't be making the playoffs this year anyway. But I think he's finding it tougher than he wanted. And, you know, there is this real concern now that, you know, things could go from bad to worse. And tomorrow isn't maybe the key day. I mean, the Milton Keynes game is going to be the real key one. Anything tomorrow, I suppose, would be a bonus, really.
Okay. So what you got out of it is that, you know, he's trying to, he's not as, I guess you could say, upbeat as he can be, and, you know, and looking forward and more confident. I wouldn't say he's lacking confidence. I took this as more of him being realistic of the situation and trying to figure out how to fix the issues that he has, David. That's what I got out of it, and I didn't see anything negative out of it. I didn't see anything positive. I think he was being very realistic of the situation and just sharing his thoughts on it. All right, David, we have much to discuss. Oh, I'm sorry. Do you have anything else you wanted to add?
Well, I was saying, he's not the kind of person who's, like, you know, upbeat anyway, I think. He comes across as quite a bit dour, I suppose, anyway, to be honest with you. Quite gruff, isn't he, you know? He's not someone who's really kind of, you know, emotional in what he says. Some people are, you can really get a good kind of feel of how they are, wearing their heart on their sleeves. I don't think he wears his heart on his sleeve. It's more just reading between the lines, really, for me.
Sure. Okay, not a problem, David. All right. Before we get into the show anymore, I have to go back and I have to put you back on the spot, my friend. You did not really answer the topic. Mr. Greg on the last show called you out a little bit, so I'm going to go right back to you. This is a yes or no answer. Will Fulham get relegated, yes, or will they stay in the league? And the answer would be no. So I'm asking you, will they get relegated, David?
If we continue on our current trajectory, yes, we will be relegated. Is that positive enough, or definite enough?
Okay, so you truly believe that they will, because you're expecting, you are assuming, and you know what happens when we assume, you're assuming that they are going to continue this path.
Well, I'm looking at the average. I tweeted it yesterday. I think you said it in 13 games, he's got 10 points.
Yes.
If you multiply that by 9 games to give you the average points, it was something like 6.92. Go on, I'll be positive. We'll round it up to 7. So we're going to get 7 points for the rest of the season, which is 2 wins and a draw, or a win and 4 draws. And from what you guys were saying on the show midweek, 7 points won't be enough. So that's, I'm saying we'll get 7 points. You're saying it won't be enough. Ergo, we're going to be relegated.
Okay, so you're going with relegation. And as you know, David, I'm not changing my mind. I still think they're going to win 5 out of 9. Excuse me, starting with tomorrow, and I'll give you my prediction. You already know I'm going to be predicting a Fulham victory, but I still strongly believe that they will get more out of the rest of the season. I do, because I think a lot that's going on right now has to do with individual mistakes, individual errors, and like Mike mentioned, a part of it is luck, and the luck has not been with them, and let's hope that the luck changes and that they clean up the mistakes that they're having. So me and you are polar opposites here. I don't think that they're going to get relegated. In fact, I feel strongly that they're not going to get relegated. In fact, David, I'm going to go back maybe 3 to 4 weeks ago. Someone that I do the show with on a regular basis said to me they weren't going to get relegated. That would be you.
Things, you know, we expected to pick up and we haven't. Yeah, if we do get relegated, I'll be wrong because, you know, before Christmas we predicted our top six and our bottom three, and yep. Fulham weren't in the bottom three. I predicted, if I remember correctly, it would be Bolton, Charlton, and MK Dons who go down. And I
you
could
did.
Still be right because if we beat MK Dons, you know, next time out or whatever, then they could really be in the dire, you know. I nearly said
sure.
the shit, sorry. I was trying, it's a bit early in the day for that. But, you know, and of course I would be right then, obviously, if that was the thing. And our top six, my top six is somewhere close to where it was would be as well.
Right.
Yours isn't because Reading are nowhere near, but, you know, that's just for another day, that one. But, you know, that just taking back to that show you said, Mike, and that was the main issue I took up with that show. I don't think luck comes into it at all. Luck is something that happens, you know, in one or two games. You know, you do get luck. Sometimes it goes your way, sometimes it doesn't. We're not down the bottom of the table because of luck or bad luck. You know, table doesn't lie, all that usual stuff. We're down the bottom because we haven't been good enough, because we've made mistakes. You know, we haven't lost games that we should have won, not really. You can't say that. Sometimes you get these games, yeah. You know, but, you know, Bristol City, we got what we deserved, unfortunately, whether you like it or not. And that's kind of a pattern for a lot of the games as well. Burnley, we got what we deserved in a way because, you know, although we played well at times, especially the first half, individually we made mistakes. We weren't able to contain them. And it's the same. It's not about luck. It's about some of the big players going hiding, as Mike has said and other people have said, and individual mistakes, giving away goals, giving away stupid penalties, potential goalkeeping errors. You know, everyone's jumping on the bandwagon now. The one I started, God knows when that was, that I didn't think Lonergan was good enough. Everyone's suddenly on the back of it now. People have, you know, in time started to realise that although he has some qualities, he's not maybe good enough overall. And where he's saved his goals in some ways, he's lost his goals in other ways. And I think Scott was talking about it, or someone in the relegation show. If you've got a weak defence, the best thing you need is a goalkeeper who's strong and positive and will come out and claim the ball and punch it. And he doesn't. And that has been the real factor for me. So, you know, it's not bad luck, is it? You know, bad luck doesn't befit you the whole season. You know, Leicester aren't top of the table because of good luck. They deserve to be there. Just like the teams at the bottom deserve to be where they are. So, you know, as I say, luck... You get a match where you're unlucky. You get a match when you're lucky. We've seen it every time. You know, the Juventus match, you know, we've talked about it before and we're going to talk about it again. I still, you know, if you remember, I said it was a perfect storm. We were lucky in some respects. In some respects, we were lucky. We deserved our win overall, but we were lucky as well. Everything went our way. I was reading the match report from the Telegraph about it. And, you know, it agreed with what I said. Zoltan Gera's... you know, the foul on him should have never been a red card. Never been a red card. Gira wasn't kind of last man and clear. There was a covering defender. Gira didn't have much pace anyway. Had that been a yellow card, the whole thing could have changed. The whole complexion of that match would have changed and we wouldn't be here, you know, remembering what a fantastic night that was. That was a little bit of luck that went in our favour, if you see my point.
I see your point, David. I see your point. On your bigger point of talking about Bettinelli, I will say, David Hulley right again, because I agree with you 100%. I agree with the conversation on the relegation show when we were talking about Lonergan and of course, Bettinelli. And I think you and Scott have valid points there. And I do expect, I'm going to say this, I would be shocked if we do not see a change in goalkeeper either in this match or the next match. I'm hoping that Marcus Bettinelli is back, is that we're seeing him over Lonergan. Lonergan is a good backup. He should not be a starter. And you gave all of the reasons why David Hulley is right again. I'm with you on that. I am totally with you on that. I will give you praise on that, David. David Hulley is right when it comes to the goalkeeper position. You were the first person to really talk about it, so you get credit there. All right, my friend. Enough talking about that. Let's now talk about Danny Murphy, because I started the show mentioning that it is his birthday. He turned 39 today. So I was thinking, what is the best Danny Murphy moment. There's only one that comes to mind. I'm sure, David, you're going to have others. It has to be the goal against Portsmouth to keep us up. Talk to me your thoughts about Danny Murphy.
Well, that was the first real big Danny Murphy moment, because that was his first full season with us. It wasn't his first full season with us. I meant it was his first season with us. I mean, he was here literally the whole season. I think he joined towards the end of the transfer window under Sanchez. But that wasn't really the season when he came into the fray. That season, you know, he slowly forced his way into the team, and I think he was underneath McBride, who was captain, of course, that year. But that was his first, I guess, real massive contribution, although he played a part in that team. Of course, he played that through ball, wonderful through ball in the last few seconds for Kamara at Man City. You talk about Juventus, that one there as well has got to be up there almost as far as Juventus being, you know, two down at Man City at the Etihad and getting three goals, including an injury time winner. Second half, that was a fantastic day. I was there with all boys because kids were free that day. So if you had an adult ticket, the kids go free. So, yeah, that was a fantastic one, and that was part of it he played. But obviously that goal was so crucial. And it was after that, the next season, you know, he became captain, integral part of the team, set-piece taker. Obviously penalties were his big forte. I don't remember him scoring with free kicks too often. He had the potential to do so, but it was his penalties that were pretty good. I think he didn't miss any more there. Obviously, the one against Man City missed, but got the rebound in. But after that, I think he was pretty much 100% with all his penalties. So that was a very useful thing to have in the team, as it always is. But, you know, he had the right sort of balance around him as well to do what he did. It really brought out the best of him. And, of course, he was an integral part as well of the Europa League run. And many memorable performances, and there's lots. I mean, you know, Man United at home, I can remember him, you know, robbing Paul Scholes and on the halfway line.
I remember that.
Going and beating Edwin van der Sar on another occasion, obviously scored a penalty against them, I think, where, I think it was Paul Scholes again, actually. He'd handled on the line and got sent off. It wasn't very lucky for Paul Scholes at Craven Cottage those couple of years, but good for us. But there were so many things, but it's hard, really, you know, to pick one. But obviously, without that header against Portsmouth, the great escape would have never happened.
I totally agree. That's why that has to be the top moment. But I'll give you an honorary moment right behind it, David, that we haven't talked about. His pass up to Simon Davis in the Hamburg match at Craven Cottage that equalized it at 1-1. Of course, and then you have the Zoltan Gera goal a little bit later. But if he doesn't get it to Simon Davis, we don't go to the Europa League final. So that was another key moment. Anything else off the top of your head that stands out, David?
Well, that one you mentioned there, Hamburg, it was a good pass, but it was one of many, many passes, you know, useful and great passes that he played. But I think on that one, although that was a good pass by Murphy, the credit's really got to go to Simon Davis because of the way he took it, you know, in midair and switched feet with it, really.
Sure.
Taking out Kevin Prince-Boateng, wasn't it, I think? You know, to finish. And I think although it was a good pass by Murphy, I mean, Davis is the one who takes the credit for me there. But
sure.
You know, I mean, he was a model of consistency. That's the thing, I think. It wasn't so
leader.
Much that,
he was a leader, David.
Yeah,
leader.
It wasn't that he had fantastic games with, you know, moments of brilliance. He was consistently good and consistently led the team. And, you know, we had the right players around him as people who made runs, people who could hold the ball up, people who did different things, you know. And the Atuhu, you know, situation, again, as we've talked about loads of times since, you know, that helped him, you know, develop his role. And people like Duff, who were eager runners, and Davis, who were workers and runners, and Zamora holding the ball up well, etc., etc. You know, they had all, you know, a good balance to that side, and that's, you know, it worked so well. Whether it's luck by Roy that he got these players together and it just clicked, or whether it was brilliant planning, we don't know, but probably a bit of both, obviously.
Right.
Yeah.
And
Danny Murphy, happy birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday. And the best way I could describe it is about a different sport. You know, basketball here. You know, point guard. He would be what we would consider in basketball, NBA, a point guard and a true point guard, true leader, true captain, because everything fed off of him. And that partnership with the two who allowed him to be the contributor that he was. The you know, again, he set everything up. He had complimentary players around him, David, but he made the engine move, and that's what was special about Danny Murphy. But his leadership is something that I will never forget. And for me, he will always be the Fulham captain. That's the way I look at Danny Murphy. And like you said, happy birthday, Danny Murphy. All right, David, we've already talked a little bit about it. Let's talk about the Juventus match. I know the current situation that we're under, you know, it is kind of sad to think about how we have fallen. You and I have been messaging back and forth. But I really want to concentrate on just talking about this incredible match. And like you said, yes, luck probably played a part of it. But just talk about, walk us through, we did this last year, walk us through again, your experience being at this match.
Obviously, we know, we came into the match with a 3-1 deficit, but that goal by, the deflected goal by Itu'u in Turin, you know, proved to be very important. Although it didn't seem so after the first few minutes when, you know, we've gone to sleep, I suppose, is the best way to put it, really. Not cleared our lines. David Trezeguet has taken advantage and put the ball in the corner. And we're now 4-1 down an aggregate. I don't think really anyone in the stadium that night could believe that we would turn it around. Not, you know, it was a difficult situation. Juventus are a team, you know, a great team with a great tradition. And Italian teams are normally pretty good at their defensive, you know, organisation and structure. So you don't expect to get that many goals past them. But, you know, we got one back. You know, Zamora was really giving them a torrid time up front. As we saw in one of the goals, I think it was Konchesky crossed it in. And he's, like, used his body strength to hold off the defender. Slammed it past old Uncle Fester in goal there. Which was, as I said, another perfect storm. We talk about dodgy goalkeepers. You know, they didn't have either of their first two keepers in goal, you know. Buffoon, whatever you want to call it. We have Buffoon in goal now. Now that was Gabor Kiraly. He was Buffoon, wasn't he? Yeah.
Okay. Yes.
Yeah. They didn't have, you know, their first two choices. They had their third choice keeper was like, you know, Uncle Fester, wasn't it, in there? You know, Christopher Lloyd in the Adams family. So, you know, old bald guy in goal. So that was a good start for us that they didn't have a good goalkeeper or a decent goalkeeper in there. There's something about bald Italian goalkeepers as well. It just doesn't work with me. Like Willy Caballero, what he's called at Man City. Whenever I see him play, I'm always kind of nervous for them. You know, I don't think he's going to have a great game, and normally that seems to be the case. But getting back to that, so yeah, Zamora obviously has held off the defender, slammed it past whatever he's called, Alberto someone, wasn't it, Uncle Fester.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember the order of the goals, and I think was it at that point we then got the red card?
I believe after the Zamora goal, we got the red card. I think. I have to think about that.
I haven't looked any of this up, so I'm doing this completely off the top of my head, and it's 6 years
sure.
ago. You know, I've been, like, nearly dead in the meantime, and I've aged 6 years as well anyway, so it's, you know, my memory isn't perfect. But, you know, that was a key thing anyway. So Zamora holding off the defender, using his strength to slam the ball home. Juventus not having their best goalkeeper in goal. Then the real big thing for me, the real turning point, and we used to do this on the post-match show, the turning point. This was the turning point, was the red card. And I was talking about this with Steve Lydiard last week, because obviously he refs, and we talked about a few of the kind of red cards or red card incidents that's been Fulham involved in over the years. And I think Steve was with me on this one, that we've both felt that there was, if there only has to be the potential of a covering defender, you know, the red card can only be awarded for denying an obvious goal-scoring opportunity. And to be an obvious goal-scoring opportunity, you have to be sure that the attacking player is going to have a clear run at goal and a clear shot at goal. If there's any doubt, then you can't give the red card. You've got to give the yellow. That's, I believe, is the interpretation of the law. So it was outside the box. We know Gira wasn't that fast, and he was in kind of a line, an angle with defenders. So there was every chance the defender could have got back. For me, yellow card definitely, but not a red. But we got it in our favour. And you know, this is where we talk about luck as well. We saw some really poor luck in red cards in Europe as well, in our European run. The Danny Murphy one at Donetsk, no, that was just stupidity. But, you know, look at the match away at Roma when we had a loony ref. Eric Nevlin's tried to slide in to get the ball, and he's barely clipped the heel of someone, and he was given a straight red. Absolutely ridiculous. You know, absolutely ridiculous. And that was, you know, supposedly for a bad foul. And, of course, we had the one at home, Roma, as well, actually. It was a bit of a jinx where our friend John Arnorisa threw himself down on the floor in the box, and Stephen Kelly was given a red card after they'd given it to Hangland at first. Obviously, it's difficult to tell those two apart, wasn't it?
Yep.
So, yeah, there's, you know, we had some kind of bad luck, but on this occasion we had good luck. And, you know, that took out one of their main defenders, obviously, and we had the man advantage after that. And I think it knocked them. They were rattled. We won on, we got another goal. And then we had, obviously, the penalty incident where Gear has scored from the penalty spot, and that levelled things up on the night. And then, of course, ultimately, with only just 8 minutes left, Dempsey, who'd, I think, come on a sub, you know, just that little turn on the edge of the area, or just outside the area on the angle, and has chipped it over Uncle Fester into the top corner. And, you know, the whole place has gone mad, and it just, everything worked. Of course, they had another man sent off in injury time for kicking out at Damien Duff, I think, which was just frustration on their part. Yeah, it made no bearing at all to the result whatsoever. But just everything went for us that night, really. Apart from after the David Trezeguet goal, you know, and perhaps in some ways that galvanised us. I don't know. We had nothing to lose at that point, and we just went out and did exactly what we'd been doing in Europe. And it was just, again, as we said before, the setup of the team. You know, I think having coached in Europe for much of his career, Roy Hodgson, he seemed to almost know how to set up a team better in Europe than he did sometimes, you know, in England. Although, ultimately, we had a great record at home. It was our away record that was a bit poor. Well, it was very poor, even under
very
Roy.
Poor.
But in Europe, over two legs, we were unbeatable almost. Oh, well, we were unbeatable over two legs because we got all the way to the final.
That's
right.
It was
only over one leg where we didn't win it ultimately. So, yeah, it was a great, fantastic night. It's unbelievable, but for me, the Hamburg one was even more unbelievable because that was, you know, we just never thought we could get there. We enjoyed it. We took it round by round. We never thought we were going to get to the final, not really. And we knocked out Shakhtar Donetsk and we couldn't believe that. And then we thought, oh, God, we got Juventus, and we knocked them out and couldn't believe that. And then we got the German champions, Wolfsburg. And then that one was the least exciting in some ways, although it was exciting at the time because it was, I don't know, we killed them in the first minute of the second match. And then obviously, you know, then back to Hamburg, and which was the real, you know, that was the real turnaround from you know, being 1-0 down with them having the away goal advantage, of course. But we can celebrate all these other ones, of course, in coming weeks when, of course, we get the anniversary of these other games. So Juventus, and you know, I think, as I tried to say to you earlier, my tweet, I feel, sums it up, that, you know, I had a tear in my eye that night thinking about, or when you think about Juventus, it brings a tear to your eye even now. But when you think about how we are now, it just brings tears to your eyes. In a completely different way.
I understand that, David. And just to clarify, you are right. David Hulley, right again, because Cannavaro was taken off in the 26th minute. That's when he got his red card. So Zamora scored, then you had the after that, you had the second goal by Fulham, and then, of course, you had in the second half, you had the penalty, then, of course, Dempsey. So you are right, David. Your order was right.
Don't make me worse than I am already, Russ.
Okay, my friend. All right, let's move on. Unfortunately, just for time's sake, we're going to move away from the Cottage Talk Roundtable for this show, David, because I want to spend a little time talking about this Birmingham City match, if you don't mind. So let's get right into it, all right? Let's talk about Birmingham. They are currently ninth. They have 15 wins, 10 draws, 11 losses. They've scored 40. They've given up 34. They're on a goal differential of plus 6. They are on 55 points. Fulham, as we know, are 20th. Only 8 victories, 13 draws, 16 losses. We've actually scored 56, but we've given up 63. We're on a minus 7 goal differential. We're on 37 points. Now, to tell you a little bit about Birmingham City, their strengths, according to WhoScored.com, creating scoring chances, creating chances using through balls. Their weaknesses, aerial duels, avoiding individual errors. They're very weak keeping possession of the ball. Their style of play, they take a lot of shots, long balls. They attempt through balls often. They attack down the right. They attempt crosses often. Opponents play aggressively against them. They do have a consistent first 11, and they really are non-aggressive. They are a counter-attacking team, David. And for the most part, they play a 4-2-3-1. That's just to give you some information on Birmingham City before I go through the stats breakdown. What are your thoughts about that?
Right, yeah, another team that plays counter-offensive. That's you know, where the alarm bells ring, because that's where I think we've been weak. You know, you look at Hull, they was counter-offensive against us. Look at, obviously, Burnley. You know, teams that run them through the middle have used pace and strength through the middle. That's where, despite playing, you know, the three centre-backs and the three in midfield, centre of midfield, we've still looked vulnerable, really. So that's what worries me most. Any team that's got pace, because, as you know, we don't have, you know, lots of pace throughout the team. We have, you know, one or two individuals who are smart, but apart from that, not really. So that's the best thing to have in any team. You've got pace. Look at Andre Gray. He's got pace and he's got strength, and he uses it. And you come up against someone like that, you're struggling, and that's where we've been struggling.
Okay, very good, David. All right, I'm now going to give you the stats breakdown, but before I do, I just want to mention their leading goal scorers. They have two that are tied at 7 apiece. It's striker Clayton Donaldson and attacking midfielder John Miguel Torrell. Another player to watch would be attacking midfielder David Cottrell, who's very good. They have a solid team. This is not a team that has all this incredible talent, but they are solid. They have a very good goalkeeper in Thomas Kuzak. And they're very decent defensively. This is just going to be a difficult team to break down. And like you said, they are a counter-attacking team, so it is scary because they can attack Fulham's weaknesses. And let's go to the stats breakdown, David. I think it's going to back that up. Again, this is according to WhoScored.com. Let's start with possession in the league. Fulham are fourth with 52.9%. David, Birmingham are dead last with 45.1%. Shots per game, Fulham are 15th with 12.4 shots per game. Birmingham are 14th with 12.5. Passing success, Fulham are 6th with 76.1. Birmingham City, again, dead last, 67.2%. Aerials won, Fulham are 13th with 20.4. Birmingham City are 18th with 18.5. Crosses per game, Fulham are 18th with 19. Birmingham City are 13th with 20. Long balls, Fulham are 14th with 84, and Birmingham City are 8th with 86. Short passes, Fulham are 4th in the league with 389 short passes per game. David, Birmingham City, again, dead last with 261 short passes per game. All right, my friend, what stands out to you with the stats?
You said they were last on possession. Was that correct?
That is correct.
I mean, and also on the short passes. So, you know, I think that kind of builds up a pretty obvious picture, doesn't it? That they're not going to be a team that plays lots of little intricate play like we try to do, they're going to either hit the ball long and run, or they're just going to run with it. Because if you know where they are in the table, and they're in a pretty good position in the table relatively, without controlling the match possession wise. So obviously they use the ball well and don't faff around with it as we do. You know, they get what they need to do without having to have the possession. So they're going to be happy probably for us to faff around with it, I guess, and pass it around and just look for the opportunities to break. That's where, you know, as I said, I see the danger. That's what those stats mean to me. I mean, to be honest with you, the rest of them, I'm almost ignoring the rest of the stats. It's just those two things, the short passes and the possession, because they don't do many short passes and they don't keep the ball. So you can kind of get a picture of how they play from that, I think.
Okay, and I agree with that, David, and I want to go right back to you because I've been thinking about this a great deal. If you're Slavica, what would be your game plan against a team like this that is just waiting for you to make a mistake and pounce? You know, you were talking about Hull City. That's a very good analogy to a team like Birmingham City. What would be your strategy against this team?
Well, I think you've got to be direct as well with them, because if you try and play too many short passes, you know, like we do, the classic thing, we get to the final third and we pass it around, they're just going to take the ball off you and going to run with it.
Right.
And, you know, catch you up the pitch. So you might as well perhaps try and be more direct yourself, either in terms of playing more longer balls or just trying to play first-time balls or shooting from distance even. I mean, we know Kuchak, you know, is supposedly a reasonable goalkeeper, but still, if you don't try, you don't score, and that's been our real issue. And if we're not going to take people on and beat them directly, then we have to let the ball do that by perhaps hitting it long sometimes. And, you know, we're the winners in the short passing stakes, but where has it got us? You know, 20th in the table or whatever it is. So perhaps, you know, we need to mix it up more and be a bit less predictable, because I think for me it's just that teams know our game plan and they can get behind the ball and just they have the pace and the strength sometimes just to, you know, if it comes to two horse race and a breakaway, they're going to get there. So what can you do otherwise? Tell the players not to make mistakes. That's all said and done, but it's not as easy as that, is it? You know?
No, it's not.
So it's kind of obvious in a way. Don't make mistakes. Try and be more direct and things. But you know, more movement, more hassling. But you know, will the players be able to do that when it comes out tomorrow on the pitch?
Well, let me ask you, because I definitely want to talk about this when we talk about your starting 11. Could this involve a change of formation? Would you advise, if you were to advise Slavica, to changing the formation? I know you love the 3-5-2, but against this team, would that be the proper formation against a team that's just waiting for you to make a mistake, David?
Well, the trouble is, it's you need strength and pace, perhaps, to counter a team like this. Play them at their own game.
Right.
So it's not the formation that worries me, it's the players. And even if we change the formation, it doesn't mean we have any players to come in. I mean, sure, you could play a 4-4-2, you could maybe put, you know, Fredericks genuinely in midfield. But to me, that's a bit of a waste of a situation, you know. Then you get stuck with the old Tom Kearney situation. What do you do with Tom Kearney? Do you, you know, sacrifice a central midfielder? Do you sacrifice a striker? You know, who do you play left midfield in that case? Because, you know, do you put Tim Ream in at left back and Garb at left midfield? Yeah, that's not really an ideal fix either. It's, you know, we're struggling a little bit, I think. You know, and we're almost forced at the moment to play the 3-5-2 because, you know, there's some things that we kind of know, we seem to know about Slavica, that Slavica likes Maddle and Amo Bieta and Byrne, apparently. So he wants all those three in the team. So that almost, you know, means you have to play three at the back. He's
sure.
Kind of realised that Kearney has to play central. So you have to play sort of three in midfield, really, central midfield. You know, hopefully he's realised that McCormack has to play up front. And you know, and I think Michael, what someone was saying the other day in the show, that, you know, you have eight or nine of the team pick itself anyway at the moment. that's kind of a dangerous scenario where we're in that, you know, there's not much competition. But what do you do? I mean, the only things you could do is, you know, swap one or two of the central defenders around. You could bring in Ream, you could bring in, you know, Spearman, you could bring in Hutchison for, you know, one or more of the current lot. You've got, you know, reasonable options in central midfield because we have Parker and Baird if fit, and O'Hara and Ince somewhere, and of course Tunnicliffe, etc. So through the spine of the team, you have got choices, and even up front, you know, we have Matt Smith and Corley back now. Yeah, maybe Matt Smith come in for, you know, just like to, I can hear Mike pulling his hair out now. bring Matt Smith in and hit the ball long tomorrow. I don't know. I mean, but I don't think it's the formation. It's just it's we don't have the right players really to mix it up that much. If we play 4-4-2, we still will be, you know, basically ponderous and faff around, I think, anyway. And then we run the risk of being even weaker in central midfield and having people running through us.
Okay, so for you, if I'm understanding correctly, David, it's you would advise them to play more direct, take more shots, and I totally agree with you. I think they try so hard with the intricate passing to get the perfect pass. I say shoot more. I agree with that. So for you, it's to, you know, and it's funny because I've heard this talk about potentially simplifying everything. And I think, you know, and again, if I'm reading between the lines, simplifying means potentially, like you said, play more direct, take more shots, and just be more solid defensively and give yourself the best chance that you can to win this match. This team is just waiting for you to make a mistake, to make one bad pass, to make that mistake that Garber made, unfortunately. You know, and Garber played a decent match, David. You were there. But it's that one mistake that changed the match. It was unfortunate. And they have to play pretty much mistake-free to get something in this match. And that's very difficult to do. All right.
Yeah.
With all
it's a confidence thing, isn't it? This is probably why they're not trying to play these early passes and these direct passes, because they're frightened of getting it wrong. They'd rather hold on to the ball and faff around with it and try and look for the perfect pass rather than play the early ball and risk it not coming off. And I think that's to do with the confidence and the morale of the squad at the moment, really.
That's a great point. That's actually a great point. There is a lack of confidence here. There is, I think, this is just my opinion, a fear of making a mistake, and that comes down to lack of confidence. And that's why maybe a slightly different approach, a more simplistic approach of just being a little bit more direct. I know Mike doesn't like it. I don't know if I like it. But really right now it is about getting the results. You know, it's funny. I was thinking about this, David. You know, last year around this time, this is when Kit decided he was just going to grind out results. And it was not pleasing on the eye, but it did work in the end. We did stay up. I don't know if I want to take it to that level, but I think that we need to be more simple in our approach and just take more shots, be a little bit more aggressive in that way instead of trying to make that perfect pass, because I think that's part of the problem. And part of the problem, I agree with you, David, is this fear, and the fear comes out of lack of confidence, afraid. They can't play afraid. I hear Slavisa say this all the time, be brave. But it really is about playing without fear. You have to be able to allow yourself to succeed. And I think part of what's going on is that they're afraid of making a mistake. You can't be afraid of making a mistake. You have to play without fear. And I think that's part of what's going on. I think it all feeds in to the problems that we're having, David. All right, my friend, we only have 10 minutes left, so who are your key players tomorrow? After all, we're setting this up. I'm curious, who are your key guys tomorrow for Fulham?
Well, I think we are relying, assuming that we're going to have the 3-5-2 kind of scenario. Again, we're relying on the people who can offer the most direct approach, I think, as to being the key to the match, because we can ask for the defence to play well. We can ask for the defensive-minded players to play well and not make mistakes. But that's not going to get you anywhere, because you know, that's only going to get you a 0-0 draw at best, perhaps. We need, you know, the people who are attack-minded. We need Kearney to be positive and direct. We need Fredericks, if he's playing, to be positive and direct. We need Garbutt to be positive and direct. We need to get down the lines. We need Ross to be positive and to you know, to show some spirit, not go hiding, not throw himself to the floor, not be petulant. And Moussa, likewise, if he's playing also, if it's the same kind of front five, let's say, or attacking five, then they are the key for me. The shape, you know, there'd be if you imagine, like, you know, that attacking kind of thrust, it's sort of like a, imagine that shape, really, you know, with Kearney yep. behind the front two and the two wing-backs overlapping. That's the kind of attacking front that we need, and they need to all be direct. Early balls into the box, early balls to each other, you know, not this ponderous kind of going round in circles and everything else and letting people, you know, in the end, getting dispossessed, losing the ball, getting run at, and conceding goals. So there's no point worrying about the defence. This is actually, you know, mini Mr. Know-it-all says we might as well, this is what he actually said yesterday, that we might as well not bother with the defence. He said we might as well just go all out attack and score as many goals as we can. And as long as we score more than they do, then it's fine.
Well, whoever scores the most goals, David, he does have a point. But I, you know, it's funny because I was thinking about that and thinking about how Birmingham City beat us last time. They beat us 5-2. They really took it to us at Craven Cottage. What's interesting, because going into this match, you know, I told you I had this as a victory. Part of the reason I did is that we went there last year, different manager, because now they have Gary Rowett. We actually beat them 2-1. So, you know, I truly believe there isn't a team out there left, you know, that we can't beat if we're playing well. It's about, I think it's about us playing up to our capability. I don't think we are, and really trying to limit the mistakes that we're making and playing with confidence, playing without fear. And I do like your analysis. I do like the way that you're looking at this match, David. I think you're on to something, my friend. All right. Let's now go to your starting 11.
Well, before I go to that, I'll tell you my other mini Mr. Know-it-all's, his other theory. His theory is that our defensive midfielders are not doing their job, and they need to be defending higher up. He said Parker does a good job, but normally he's making last-ditch tackles and blocks in the penalty area or on the edge of the box. We need to be doing this further up the pitch. We need you know, strong defensive players who are on the halfway line making interceptions, making tackles. And so I'm thinking about that and who can do this. You know, maybe that's why Tyler Cliff's back in the team, because he does run around like a madman, because we need to be winning the ball back in higher areas. It's no good winning the ball back when we're almost, when they're bearing down on goal or when they're within shooting range. And I think he's right. You know, we need to, you know, we've talked about playing higher up the pitch. It's not just the defence needs to be higher up. The midfield needs to be winning the ball higher up the pitch. We need to keep them out of our half. And if we can do that, you know, we won't concede. But it's a big if, obviously. And yeah, I don't know if you want to comment on that, or should I go straight into my starting 11?
No, listen, David, I actually agree with that analysis. And it's funny because if we're going back several matches, I remember Mike and I going through the average position. And what was interesting about one of those, I can't remember what match it was really everyone was being pushed up. And Mini Ruiz has actually a very good point. You know, he really does. Because if we're, you know, if we're defending higher up the pitch, we are keeping them in. That's a very good point, but I also think that goes along with the attitude of playing more direct. It's really being more aggressive and not allowing them an inch to breathe. And I think I understand where your son's going with on that, David.
Yeah, he's no longer Mini Ruiz either.
Oh, he's not?
No, he's Mini Amobieta or Mini Mr. Know-it-all.
Okay, fine. All right, my friend, we only have 5 minutes left. Go to your starting 11. I have a feeling it pretty much picks itself.
Marcus Bettinelli in goal.
I agree. I totally agree.
I have a feeling he's going to be coming back. I still think we'll see Maddle, Byrne and Amobieta. Garbutt and Fredericks, assuming they're both fit as well. Central midfield, I think Scott Parker needs to come out and roll his sleeves up still, even though there are arguments for everyone else. And I think he'll play Tynecliffe because he has kind of the most energy. Jamie O'Hara, I like, but he is kind of one of the architects of the short pass as well, and maybe that's not what we need to be doing tomorrow. Tom Kenny in the hole, and McCormack up front. And the other one is, you know, and I've almost talked myself out of this. I was going to say Dembele, but I've almost started thinking about Matt Smith, you know, whether...
Wow.
Just even if it upsets Mike, just because he was making fun of my non-direct answers earlier, but I could almost see a Matt Smith. I think it would be Dembele, but I wouldn't be surprised if you suddenly saw Matt Smith after Dembele's petulant exit. You know, just maybe to be more direct and have some strength up there and everything. I don't know. It's not pretty, but if you've got people who can, if you're playing wing backs and people are going to go, you know, try and get crosses in, then maybe have a big target man in there as well to cause them a bit of disruption. I don't know. Just something to mix it up. But
okay.
He's from that part of the world, Matt Smith. And so I'd almost, you know, I could see that over Dembele. I could actually see that. But Bettinelli would be the main change, I think. And I have a feeling it's coming and it's going to be this week.
I really hope you're right, David. I started mentioning this last week, and this goes back to David Hulley being right. You've been calling this for a long time. You've really been analyzing Andy Lonergan, and I think Andy Lonergan has done a nice job, but he really is a backup goalkeeper. We need our starting goalkeeper, and that's Marcus Bettinelli. So I hope that he's back in this Birmingham City match. All right, my friend, let's now go to predictions, and let's start with the Cottage Talk Twitter page. And we have 97 votes. Win is only at 24%. Draw is at 19%. And, yes, loss is at 57%. So that tells you how the Fulham supporters feel about that. I'm having a hard time pulling up right now the predictions on the Cottage Talk Facebook page. So while I do that, David, I will go to your prediction. I have a feeling I know what it is, but go ahead.
Well, hopefully this is David Hulley wrong again. 3-0 to Birmingham.
3-0 to Birmingham. They don't score that many goals, David. I don't know if you're going to be right on that number.
That's a kiss of death saying that as well, Russ, isn't it?
I know it is. I shouldn't even say that. Okay. Here are some predictions. Jeffrey Wilkins, 2-1. Fulham, McCormack with a double. Now, I don't know if this was your wife or you, because sometimes you do go in there, but Christina Hulley has 5 wins for me. Games left. Was that you or your wife?
That was me.
Yeah, I figured that, David. That's you. You coming at me. I knew that. I knew it was you. Okay. All right. That's fine, though. I wanted to confront you on that. Ben Reed says 1-1 and a much better performance, we hope. Marty Ward, it's gonna one of two ways. We pull our socks up and get a last-minute winner, equalize it for a draw, 1-1 or 2-2. Chris Arnott said, well, it won't end up Birmingham 0. Let's see. Stixos, well, I was right about Bristol City at home, so I'm confidently predicting a 2-0 loss and a sending off. Guy Rofe has 2-2. Or am I being optimistic? Okay, time for my prediction. David, I've already predicted a victory. I'm actually going all out on this victory. I'm saying 3-1 to Fulham. 3-1 to Fulham.
The men in the white coats are already overworked, Russ.
I know, David. And this time, I am not going for a hat trick for anyone. I'm going for goals from Tom Kearney, Ross McCormack, and Moussa Dembele. I'm going, each one will score a goal, but I'm going 3-1. Anyways, David, we only have about 30 seconds left. Thank you for doing this with me, my friend.
Thanks very much, Russ, and yeah, I hope I'm wrong.
I hope you're wrong, too, because I'm getting sick and tired of David Hulley being right again. So, but it's time to wrap up the show. For David Hulley, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk. Cheers, my friend.
Cheers, Russ. Thanks, everyone.
Boys and girls, come England gone.